It's your Thursday Daily Delivery. I'm Michael Rand. Glad to be back for another day and hope everyone is doing well out there. Hopefully everybody's doing better than the Twins. Man, we'll get to them in a little bit here at the start of the show, but boy, not great. Got swept by the Orioles and 6-11 on the season. Not the start people envisioned this year, not the way things people would have imagined the season unfolding just 6 months ago, and there was so much good energy around the playoffs, things like that, breaking that postseason streak. So we'll get to them here in just a moment. Got some transfer news for Gophers men's basketball and Gophers men's hockey, the portal working for them in this case. We'll explain who the two new players, one on each team, will be next season. An uncomfortable exchange at Caitlin Clark's Indiana Fever introductory news conference on Wednesday. We'll get to that at the end of the show. Sarah McClellan from the Star Tribune joins me here in a little bit also to talk Wild hockey, talk about the end of that season, their final game tonight against Seattle. Not the year they envisioned, just like the Twins haven't started well. The Wild didn't start well this year, had some lulls along the way. Found out some good things, too. Obviously, Brock Faber, an excellent rookie. Marco Rossi had the kind of year they would have hoped he would have had. Kirill Kaprizov ended up having the kind of year they would have wanted him to have, but not enough depth and interesting questions ahead next season, next year being the last one of the Zach Parise, Ryan Suter buyout penalties before they are clear of those in the 25-26 season and what that could mean for the Wild. We'll get into their goaltending situation right now, too, which is interesting after re-signing veteran Marc-Andre Fleury for one more season. First, though, what I missed, like I said at the jump, the Twins, 6-11 now after getting swept in Baltimore. They had like that temporary positive vibes right after they won that doubleheader against Detroit to get themselves to 6-7. They had the bad homestand, the rough first game against Detroit, but they won those two games. Then they had that last game against Detroit where they had the game, right? It was 3-0 in the eighth inning. They had the game right there. Ended up losing 4-3 just because, you know, pitching, infield defense, things like that, couldn't get it done. But, you know, I still felt like they were feeling a little bit better about themselves. But then they go to Baltimore, which a team they just can't beat lately, a team that has been really good the last couple of years. I mean, last year they were excellent. This year they look to be excellent again. They go to Baltimore. They get swept. The first two games aren't particularly close. The third, the Twins are there, right? They're up 2-1 in the late innings. They go ahead with a nice little rally in the seventh, some aggressive base running, and then it all falls apart. The bullpen gives up two home runs. They lose on a walk-off, 4-2, 6-11. 6-11 on the season. Are they already at an inflection point in the season, just 17 games in? Sure sounds that way. Here's Griffin Jacks. A quote from Griffin Jacks after the game. He is the relief pitcher who gave up the walk-off home run. He said, quote, "There's a lot of tension and pressure that everybody's put on themselves. When you look around and there's a lot of key guys missing, a lot of guys, maybe myself included, trying to do too much at times." Now, I'm not sure which key players he's alluding to because there's a lot, obviously, right? They're missing easily three of their most important players right now. Jhon Duran hasn't pitched all year. He went on the injured list right before the season started. Might not have even been in this situation with Griffin Jacks if Duran was there. He might have been pitching in that situation because he is definitely their number one relief pitcher. Royce Lewis injured on the first game of the season. We don't know exactly when he's coming back, but it feels like it's going to be at least another month for that. Carlos Correa has been out for a while now, too, with his injury. So those three guys, missing those three guys, already missing the departures that they lost in the offseason to free agency. It feels like they're at a point right now, a dangerous point in their season already when they're 6-11. Now, here's the opportunity. Here's the glass half full. Here's where we still get to learn a little bit more about them because their schedule has been hard. They've played Baltimore. They've played the Dodgers. They've played some of these good teams. You want them to play well against those good teams if they are going to be a playoff contender, but you don't have to have that all sorted out in April. So here's the opportunity. The next handful of games, next four series, three games against Detroit. Detroit's a better team this year, but that's still a team where you feel like you are on a more level footing, that you should play better, that you have an opportunity to get some momentum back at Target Field against Detroit. Then four against the White Sox, who are just awful. That series also at Target Field. Then three against the Angels, who have been okay this year, but let's face it, that's not a team that's probably going to be a contender this year. Those are road games. And then three more at Chicago. So seven against the White Sox, three against Detroit, three against the Angels, 13 total games. They need to at least post a winning record. I'd love to see them go, you know, for their own sake, go 8-5 in that stretch, right? Start feeling better about themselves, get their record closer to 500, start to say, okay, it was a rough start to the season. We still have some things to figure out, but we can tread water until we get healthy, until we get Duran back, until we get Lewis back, until we get Correa back. Carry that record to May. You know, that's that stretch of games. It'll be May 1st by the time that stretch of games is over. It'll be into May by the time that stretch is over, a couple weeks from now. Can they get themselves at least right enough for that? Because right now, it feels, like I said, like an inflection point already 17 games into the season. That is not what we would have thought going into this thing. Couple more things for you. Like I said, transfer portal working for the Gophers. They get a goalie. Gophers men's hockey team gets a goalie from Penn State. Liam Soulier coming over from Penn State. He was the starter in Penn State the last couple of seasons. Had, you know, really good year 2 years ago as they made it to the NCAA quarterfinals. But this year, not as great, but Penn State kind of slumped too. So you imagine he immediately enters the competition to be potentially a starting goalie for them next season. So that is a big get for the Gophers men's hockey team. Gophers men's basketball team gets Frank Mitchell, fourth leading rebounder in the nation last season from Canisius. You know, big, strong inside presence, 6'8", 240, hoping that he will kind of pick up some of the slack from losing Pharrell Payne into the transfer portal. And we'll see. We'll see. You know, you lose Big Ten caliber players. You bring in, you know, someone from a lower division. You never know what you're going to get. You never know exactly what is going to happen in the year. But, you know, at least they are getting some replacements now to see if they can help. So both the men's hockey team and the men's basketball team landing transfers that could help immediately next season. Let's talk Wild hockey today with Sarah McClellan from the Star Tribune. Season ends Thursday, Sarah. No playoffs this year, which we've known for a little while, and probably for all intents and purposes, a few weeks, when kind of mathematically it looked like it was going to be a long shot at best. But still a year of information, I guess is how I'd put it. They learned a lot about themselves this year, learned some strengths, some weaknesses, and just kind of trying to tie a bow around a year that kind of felt like a year of transition to me a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. And it makes sense with where they are, obviously, with their cap situation and having, you know, almost $15 million eaten up by the Zachary Zane Ryan Suter buyout. So you knew that, you know, they weren't able to simply invest all of their resources into this roster. And I think you obviously saw that, particularly probably with their depth, you know, their depth on defense, but also their depth up front. Depth scoring was a big issue for this team this season, whereas in years past, it wasn't. This was kind of a very well-balanced lineup that, you know, as recent as last season, was competing for a division title at one point. So, yeah, I think it was probably a lot of takeaways, and it probably maybe in some sense set the tone for maybe even next season, because they'll still have that same cap charge again next season. But maybe with a little bit more upside in the sense of, you know, the young players that could come into the group, into the mix. We got a preview of that, you know, this last little stretch of the season, getting kind of a look at how some of these younger players could fit in and if they seem ready. And I think that's what this last stretch, particularly since they've been mathematically eliminated, has been really good for, to get that gauge, get that barometer. And then, you know, I think now going into the offseason after this game Thursday, we'll see how this roster evolves. There's, you know, like we said, there's still that cap charge, so there's not a ton of flexibility. There's some. I still think there's a way for this team to evolve. But, you know, a lot of this team is under contract. We can kind of already tell some of the young players that are trying to vie to be here permanently. And then what other maybe creative avenues, you know, does management take to adjust and change this team? I think obviously that'll be key to watch this summer.
You talked about, you know, some of the depth this season in terms of, you know, Kirill Kaprizov ends up having a very good year. You know, it was felt like it was a little slow at times, but he really picked it up at the end of the year to be, kind of right where you would expect or want him to be. Same kind of thing with Matt Boldy. Like he had some stretches where you're like, oh, what's going on there? But he's right up there where you'd want him to be. You had Brock Faber emerge as, a Calder Trophy candidate at the very least. You had Marco Rossi show what he can do. You had some high-end talent. The problem was it wasn't necessarily buttressed by third line, fourth line production, second, third defensive pair kind of thing. There's just not enough depth there. So how do you think, A, were they surprised by that? And B, as you think about some of these younger players who could fill some of those roles next year, what do you think that they've learned that they like in, kind of in these last handful of games?
Yeah, that depth I think was really exposed, especially inside the division. If you look at the teams that are headlining the Central, Dallas, Winnipeg, Colorado, yes, they have the high-end talent. They have their own version of Kirill Kaprizov, but they also have scores up and down their lineup. The number of players that they have that have scored 10 goals, 15 goals, 20 goals, just outnumbers, the Wild in a lot of those situations. A lot of those teams do, but in the points as well, just they're getting contributions line after line. And so that's obviously, was a big deficiency for this lineup this season. A lot of it, I think, was highlighted and maybe emphasized even more because of injury. You take away someone like Marcus Foligno, who missed big chunks of the season. He's been somebody who's been able to kind of headline that bottom six these last few years, has had a terrific shooting percentage. So when he's not a factor, I think that's kind of hurt them as well. So they just haven't had that boost in the bottom six. Frederick Goudreau is another player who had 19 goals last season and is at five right now going into, the season finale. And that's a big drop off, especially again, to compete with the caliber of teams that the Wild were going head to head with to try to make the playoffs and overcome a slow start and climb back into this race. So I think injury to expose that on the blue line, just the players and the combinations they had to rely on in the absence of Jared Spurgeon. Jonas Brodin was hurt, even someone like Zach Bogosian after his arrival via trade. It just wasn't as stable as the Wild have been in the past. Now, we can't predict if injuries are going to happen next season, but there is a way for them to start to address who are those options. Who are the call-up players in case something happens? But also, who could be there from the get-go? I think we're seeing some of that in, Murat Kuznetsov, and Leon Ogren. The fact that these young players, have come over now, they look like they fit in. I think with Kuznetsov, the more he's played, the more he's showed more of the game he has. Just his competitiveness, how strong he can be on pucks, winning faceoffs, but being someone who goes to the net, that really looks like someone that can, maybe provide some real good definition to, like a third line center type role. And Ogren too, it's been a much smaller sample size for him, obviously, since he just made his NHL debut last Friday in Vegas, but has really arrived as advertised, just with the hockey sense, the speed. I think having the size to kind of handle the rigors of the NHL, I think he's really impressed. And obviously, he's been able to, produce a little bit as well and, show some of that offensive game too. But I think so much in adapting to the NHL, whether it be from the KHL or the SHL, there's so much, other little nuances involved. And I think these players have showed that it isn't as far off of a gap, for them maybe than you'd expect for someone that young. So I think having those players kind of fit in and maybe forecast the, maybe better balance that the Wild have needed this season, maybe they're then in a better position next season to weather adversity if that does again then challenge, just their personnel and their manpower again.
Well, that's a good point because I remember like 2 years ago, right? Not last year, but 2 years ago before the Fiala trade, it felt like balanced scoring depth was a real hallmark of this team. You obviously had the Kaprizov line with Zuccarello on it and Hartman, right? But then you had the Fiala line and then you had the Eriksson-Ek, Greenway, Foligno line that was really just like a great two-way line. And even the fourth line could You had some, that was like, that was a real calling card of that team. So that when you don't have that, you really feel that absence, I would imagine, when that's been a strength and then suddenly it's not just okay, it's almost a weakness at this point.
Even the trades, too. I mean, that's another fair point. Like, they traded away three NHLers and Pat Maroon, Brandon Duhaime, and Connor Dewar that, yeah, essentially could have really, slotted into their bottom six, their fourth line or their third line. So, again, I think especially down the stretch here, that's been really exposed is just, that they haven't had that push from those depth lines that they've needed. And it's been reflected in the results, obviously, too. I think some of that, too, is probably, again, it goes back to the money and the
Sure.
finances and how and who this team is able to sign in the offseason to bolster, that depth chart. So again, maybe that's something they can look to this offseason if they have a little bit more wiggle room that they decide to dedicate to that. Because, we know the top half of the lineup is pretty much at gridlock. Everyone's signed. So can they find a way, to, prepare, I guess, for the potential of injuries and absences, get more insurance, get more reinforcements, but also then can these young players in the meantime, as is, slot into this roster and just give them a better chance to compete, from the get-go?
Well, and you're right. I mean, and thinking about the money, like you got one more year of the buyouts, but like you think about what $15 million can buy on a roster. And if you're talking about depth, you're talking about, $3 to $4 million players, however you want to divvy it up. Like that's a lot of roster depth right there. That's it's you can have a high end player and a couple depth players. Like you when they are able to do that again, that will be a big deal, I imagine. Just like the feeling of, okay, we don't just have to like kind of scrimp and like, $1 million player here, $2 million player here. Like that will be, you just realize when you talk about roster depth, what the missing $15 million or, approximately $15 million is with those cap charges still.
Yeah, and I think that's why, as much as maybe this season and next season, you could maybe just look at this precursor, this interlude into, okay, well, what can really happen? What will be, maybe the most exciting time in recent memory for the organization? But I think that's why this interim is still really important because it sets the table for that. Are they going to get this influx of cash to inject into a non-playoff team, a team that's coming up maybe one or two playoff misses? Or is this a team that has found a way to stay healthy, maybe be competitive, challenge these teams in the Central Division or in a wild card race? What type of position will they be in? And maybe then that can, help them decide how to spend the money. Is it all in free agency? Can they lure someone in, that sees a team that maybe has the bones and the structure to make that next jump? Or does it look like, no, they're struggling? This is maybe a longer process. I think that's why, this season and next season can't just be written off as, okay, well, this is just who they are with no money. Because there is going to be an opportunity when that cap charge comes off the books, and in what shape is the roster going to be in to, merit that type of injection of money to elevate them.
Even in the midst of kind of the wind down to the season, you've done a couple of fun stories. One that kind of pertains directly to some of the new guys, like just getting acclimated to locker room traditions, kind of protocols. How did that kind of come about, and how much fun did you have kind of reporting that story? Kind of explain that a little bit more, please.
Yeah, I enjoyed that process, and I thought of it because I thought of someone starting a new job, like Kuznetsov coming to a new country, a new league, and you get hired for a job, the job, but you kind of want to know, like, where do I park? And where's the good spot for lunch? And is this the fridge that everyone uses, or do I have
Right.
to, there's so many little nuances to a job. And I think that's relatable beyond just, being a professional athlete. But so that got me thinking, like, what are all kind of the etiquette, the protocol, the unwritten rules that go along with fitting in, to a new team, a new league? And so it was very interesting to kind of learn about all their, you know, their routines. Yeah, some of the unwritten rules, what rookies do versus what veterans do, but just the schedule and the timeline that they keep. And it sounds like, you know, it's very scheduled. It's very kind of set in stone. But again, an example, you know, they will play that pregame soccer game, you know, two touch, and they'll kick the soccer ball around. And I don't think it's as easy as just jumping into the game because there's rivalries built into the game between longstanding teammates,
Sure.
and you have to know and find out who that player is trying to eliminate and who he might be, you know, trying to kick the ball to make him botch it and drop it and get, you know, knocked out. And so there's all these nuances, and I think that's, you know, like again, I think that exceeds hockey. That's relatable in life. You just want to fit in, and you can do the job. You know, you were hired for a reason, but how do you fit in? And it was really interesting to kind of learn how to fit in with the Wild.
Royal Credit Union's smart checking accounts offer no monthly fees and no minimum balance. Enjoy financial freedom when you open your Royal Credit Union smart checking account online at rcu.org/gochecking. Insured by NCUA.
One guy who definitely fits in, and you wrote about his, you know, his prank wars, Marc-Andre Fleury. He's back for another year now. We just learned this week a 1 year extension. I feel bad, or feel bad, or feel good for you. You get to write all of the farewell stories a second time. We didn't know if he was going to be back or not, but he's signed. Interesting there. Let's talk about the prank wars first. That's fun with, you know, with the former teammate, but then also just kind of the significance of that move and what it might mean for the goalie room. But first, please, the prank wars.
Yeah, you know, this was something with Brandon Duhame that started, you know, late last year, this season, but you know, right before the holidays. And you know, Fleury has had this kind of be part of his repertoire for years. He is known as a jokester, prankster. But then when Duhame kind of poked fun at Fleury's age and aged him more than he is, you know, that kind of teed off this prank war, and there was some clothes missing. And Duhame, we saw him walking out of the arena missing like his shirt and wearing different shoes. You know, and then obviously we saw Fleury's vehicle get TP'd when Colorado came through town recently, because obviously Duhame was traded to the Avalanche before the deadline. And so then obviously, if you look at the schedule, you would have saw that the Wild was back in Colorado for one more game against the Avalanche, and Duhame left practice, and his vehicle was up on cinder blocks. The wheels were taken off, a couple wheels were locked to a fence, and I think even the tools to change the tire were missing. But that wouldn't have helped because Duhame didn't know how to change a tire. So, talking to Fleury, that was, I think he said, maybe at the top of the list for pranks that he's pulled. And there have been some doozies, it sounds like, through the years. You think how long he's been in the NHL. But, you know, I think it's important, yeah, that you bring that up, because I think that just shows, again, someone who's not ready to retire, who's still having fun. It's been a difficult season for the Wild. Their goaltending has been up and down. But I think for Fleury to still, you know, find the enjoyment, have fun, I think that was big for him. And you know, he's had some really strong spurts this season. Obviously, even looking at the records that, you know, he broke to become only the fourth to play 1,000 games, to pass Patrick Waugh and become the second winningest goalie in NHL history. But he had that run kind of coming out of the All-Star break when the Wild were still kind of, you know, making a push in that playoff race, and he was a big part of that. And so I think for him, it was just that being torn and, like, you know, not knowing for sure, that maybe kind of made him feel, okay, I'm not ready yet, not ready to hang up the skates for good and retire. So he's back, and it really kind of makes the goaltending very interesting, I think. You know, you would think, okay, he's back, Gustafsson's under contract, but I think the Wallstedt factor has made maybe their goaltending one of, if not the most pressing question of the offseason, because how do they handle it? You know, Wallstedt obviously had that NHL debut game against Dallas that was a very lopsided loss. But you know, Bill Guerin has come out and said that, you know, he takes the blame for putting you know, Walt said in that situation, it just wasn't really the right time or the right team or the right place, maybe for him to start his career. But he had two wins after, you know, this late season call up, really looked like he rebounded, looked more like the goalie he's been projected to be and that he's shown since he's left Sweden and been in Iowa in the minors. You know, and so he can come back at camp and really make a case. So, you know, what do they do? I think they have options, right? You know, they have Fleury for one last season. You know, they could roll back and keep that Gustavsson Fleury tandem in place. They could maybe elevate, you know, Wallstedt and figure out then what's next for Gustavsson. And they have options. And I think that's something that they're going to obviously have to look into. I don't think they're making a decision eminently about how to evolve that. But I also think Garen feels it's a position of strength for them now. They have three goalies. They don't have to rush Wallstedt. They don't have to force him into this role. But it's a position that's probably, you know, trending in a direction where they're going to need some clarity to how to handle that. It's not just, you know, for next season, but then I think that will obviously set them up for the future.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at it when I saw the news, I think it was Wednesday morning, and when I saw the news, I was like, well, you can read it one of two ways, right? You can say either that Fleury coming back means they feel good about Wallstedt and they think Wallstedt can be, you know, the guy or at least the co-star next year and play, you know, a half a schedule at least and kind of be that guy as they transition towards the future. Or you could read it to say, hey, they're not quite ready yet. They want to keep the tandem they had together this year, even if it wasn't the most effective tandem this year, to kind of like give Wallstedt another year. I think you can read it either way. And I don't think, like you said, they don't have to decide which way they're going to play yet. Now they kind of have at least that option of what to do.
And, you know, Garen did point out that he felt like goaltending is still very much indicative of the play in front of the net. And yeah. So, you know, he did make mention of that and just how, you know, the team could do a better job really to set their net up for success. So in that sense, you know, maybe that leads you to believe, okay, if they're healthy, if they get a Jared Spurgeon back, maybe they do feel the confidence is there to, you know, again, rely on a Fleury Gustavsson tandem. You know, especially with Gustavsson, I think late, you know, Garen saw, you know, some strong games from him. You know, obviously he wrapped up his season Monday with a win in Los Angeles, and you know, Fleury's scheduled to start in the season finale Thursday against Seattle. So if that is for sure, finally Gustavsson's last game, I think he gets to go into the offseason with a little momentum in his game. Obviously there was that tough loss in Colorado, you know, but I think for him, like he mentioned, it was inconsistent. And I think a lot of that he chalks up to just making sure that, you know, he's mentally sharp, mentally engaged, just how you mentally rebound, especially in games. And so that's something I think the offseason could really help him with.
Final thing, Sarah McClellan, every team wants to make the playoffs at the beginning of the year. Every team wants to be a contender, feel like they're going in the right direction. How do you think the Wild will assess this season? How do you think they feel about where they finished up? Like disappointing or whatever? Like, do you think this was do you think this was realistic from the start of the year? Or do you think they should be disappointed? How do you think they should read how this season played out?
Disappointment is definitely a word I've heard a lot. I think, you know, when you look back to the start of the season, it kind of went in a circle. Like they kind of finished where they started. And I think what makes or maybe fuels that disappointment is they flirted with contending with a playoff spot. If you took out that middle, if you took out that post All-Star game stretch, you know, maybe it wouldn't feel, you know, so much like a sting because they struggled. They had a very bad start. They had, you know, at one point it looked like it would be the worst penalty kill in NHL history.
Right.
Dean Evason was fired. Bob Woods was fired. I mean, they were near the bottom. And then, you know, John Hines came in. They started to win. You know, they still dealt with injuries, obviously. I think that's important context. But they still found a way to, you know, kind of be relevant in this race. And unfortunately for them, though, I just feel like they never got that signature win. They never got that signature performance. They would get so close and they'd rattle off four or five quality games. And then when it came time to like really, you know, make a statement, you know, maybe leapfrog a team or really put pressure on someone, that was when they'd have one of their worst games of the year. And so I think that probably goes back to just how the team is. They weren't healthy. They didn't have the money to completely invest in this roster. So I think that probably then piggybacks onto just their fundamental construction. But again, they kind of finished where they started. And there was that interlude in the middle. But this was a team that dealt with a lot of adversity and injury and finances. And I think that still is kind of going to be an important, or at least maybe, you know, a very noteworthy takeaway from this season. Kind of what set the tone remained the tone and finished out as the tone.
Well, we'll see if they can reverse that next year, kind of find a new, more consistent level. Again, one more year of cap penalties before they get to, you know, the clearer skies ahead. We've been waiting for that for a while. They got one more year. They don't want to just skip over it. They got, you know, they want to be competitive, but I do feel like they are kind of looking towards that as well. Sarah McClellan, appreciate it as always. Enjoy hopefully some time off here. You know, I'm sure you got some wrap up stuff to do in this game to cover Thursday night, but your season ends a little bit earlier than it usually would too. So enjoy some time off and I'm sure we'll catch up down the road.
Sounds good. Take care.
Great stuff from Sarah, as always. Read all of her season-ending stuff at Star Tribune, startribune.com. I don't know what next year's going to look like for the Wild. I'm a little bit curious to see kind of how they bridge this kind of period between now and when those buyouts that we've been talking about for years now, when those come off the books. They can't just punt on next season, but I do feel like they have to use it to really get a longer look at some of these young players. I really feel like Jasper Walstead is going to be the starting goalie next year that they're going to trade Gustafson. I don't know that for sure, but that feels like the way that it will be trending right now after re-signing Fleury. Feel like they need more scoring depth. Feel like they need to figure out who can play, who can't play. That should be the motive for 2024-25. Kind of like the Vikings. Kind of feel like the Vikings are going to be in the same boat. Let's figure out who can play, who can't play, and get some real momentum going forward. Let's finish with the cooler. They like to say on Twitter, formerly Twitter, now X, that there's a main character every day. You don't want to be the main character. Greg Doyle, columnist for the Indianapolis Star, became that main character on Wednesday at the introductory news conference for Caitlin Clark. Made the heart gesture towards her that she makes towards her family. Awkward, at best, conversation ensues. Here's the audio from that news conference and that interaction between Greg Doyle and Caitlin Clark.
Hi, Caitlin. Greg Doyle, Indy Star. Real quick, let me do this.
You like that?
I like that you're here. That you're here.
I do that at my family after every game, so.
Okay, well, let's start doing it to me and we'll be get along just fine. So, question is.
Suffice to say, Doyle did not win the press conference. Now, he did write an apology column. I'm not sure he stuck that one either. You can be the judge. That's on Indy Star. But yeah, Greg Doyle was the main character on social media on Wednesday. He might still be the main character on Thursday as well. That will do it for me today. Chris Hine joins me on Friday's show to talk about his excellent Naz Reid profile, long profile about Naz's story and some of the most important people in his life. If you haven't read that yet, go check it out on Star Tribune, startribune.com. But he and I will talk a lot about that. And, of course, the upcoming playoff series against the Suns, which starts Saturday, 2:30 at Target Center. That will do it for me today. Until tomorrow, I am Michael Rand. Have a great rest of your Thursday, and we'll talk to you then.